Voyage. It's a moonless night, and the huge reddened whirlpool of the Milky Way lies below the horizon. With only the blue-white pinprick glare of Lucifer for illumination, it's too dark to read a newspaper. Maddie is old enough to remember a time when night was something else, when darkness stalked the heavens, the Milky Way a faded tatter spun across half the sky. A time when ominous Soviet spheres bleeped and hummed their way across a horizon that curved, when geometry was dominated by pi, astronomy made sense, and serious men with horn-rimmed glasses and German accents were going to the moon. October 2nd, 1962. That's when it all changed. That's when life stopped making sense. Of course, it first stopped making sense a few days earlier, with the U-2 flights over the concrete emplacements in Cuba, but there was a difference between the lunacy of brinksmanship, Khrushchev's shoe banging on the table at the UN as he shouted, "We will bury you!" and the Flat Earth daydream that followed, shattering history and plunging them all into this nightmare of revisionist geography. But back to the here and now. She's sitting on the deck of an elderly ocean liner on her way from somewhere to nowhere, and she's annoyed because Bob is getting drunk with the F-deck boys again and eating into their precious grubstake. It's too dark to read the ship's daily news sheet, mimeographed blurry headlines from a world already fading into the ship's wake. It'll be at least 2 weeks before their next landfall, a refueling depot somewhere in what the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration surveyors, in a fit of uncharacteristic wit, named the Nether Ocean. And she's half out of her skull with boredom. When they signed up for the immigration board tickets, Bob had joked, "A 6-month cruise? After a vacation like that, we'll be happy to get back to work." But somehow the sheer immensity of it all didn't sink in until the 4th week out of sight of land. In those 4 weeks, they'd crawled an expanse of ocean wider than the Pacific, pausing to refuel twice from huge rust-colored barges. And still, they were only a sixth of the way to continent F204, New Iowa, immersed like the ultimate non sequitur in the ocean that replaced the world's horizons on October 2, 1962. 2 weeks later, they passed the radiators. The radiators thrust from the oceanic depths to the stratosphere, Everest-high black fins finger-combing the watery currents. Beyond them, the tropical heat of the Pacific gave way to the subarctic chill of the Nether Ocean. Sailing between them, the ship was reduced to the proportions of a cockroach crawling along a canyon between skyscrapers. Maddie had taken one look at these guardians of the interplanetary ocean, shuddered, and retreated into their cramped room for the 2 days it took to sail out from between the slabs. Bob kept going on about how materials scientists from NOAA and the National Institutes were still trying to understand what they were made of, until Maddie snapped at him. He didn't seem to understand that they were the bars on a prison cell. He seemed to see a waterway as wide as the English Channel, and a gateway to the future. But Maddie saw them as a sign that her old life was over. If only Bob and her father hadn't argued, or if Mum hadn't tried to pick a fight with her over Bob. Maddie leans on the railing and sighs, and a moment later nearly jumps out of her skin as a strange man clears his throat behind her.
"Excuse me, I didn't mean to disturb you."
"That's all right," Maddie replies, irritated and trying to conceal it. "I was just going in."
"A shame. It's a beautiful night," says the stranger.
He turns and puts down a large briefcase next to the railing, fiddling with the latches.
"Not a cloud in sight. Just right for stargazing."
She focuses on him, seeing short hair, a small paunch, and a worried 30-something face. He doesn't look back, being preoccupied with something that resembles a photographer's tripod.
"Is that a telescope?"
she asks, eyeing the stubby cylindrical gadget in his case.
"Yes."
An awkward pause.
"Name's John Martin. Yourself?"
"Maddie Holbright."
Something about his diffident manner puts her at ease.
"Are you settling? I haven't seen you around."
He straightens up and tightens joints on the tripod's legs, screwing them into place.
"I'm not a settler. I'm a researcher. 5 years, all expenses paid, to go and explore a new continent."
He carefully lifts the telescope body up and lowers it onto the platform, then begins tightening screws.
"And I'm supposed to point this thing at the sky and make regular observations. I'm actually an entomologist, but there are so many things to do that they want me to be a jack-of-all-trades, I guess."
"So they've got you to carry a telescope, huh?" I don't think I've ever met an entomologist before.
A bug hunter with a telescope, he agrees. Kind of unexpected.
Intrigued, Maddie watches as he screws the viewfinder into place, then pulls out a notebook and jots something down.
What are you looking at?
He shrugs.
There's a good view of S. Doradus from here, he says.
You know, Satan, and his two little angels.
Maddie glances up at the violent pinprick of light, then looks away before it can burn her eyes. It's a star, but bright enough to cast shadows from half a light-year's distance.
The disks?
Them. There's a camera body in his bag, a chunky old Bronica from back before the Soviets swallowed Switzerland and Germany whole. He carefully screws it onto the telescope's viewfinder.
The Institute wants me to take a series of photographs of them. Nothing fancy, just the best this 8-inch reflector can do. Over 6 months. Plot the ship's position on a map. There's a bigger telescope in the hold for when I arrive, and they're talking about sending a real astronomer one of these days. But in the meantime, they want photographs from 60,000 miles out across the disk. For parallax, so they can work out how fast the other disks are moving.
Disks.
They seem like distant abstractions to her, but John's enthusiasm is hard to ignore.
Do you suppose they're like, here?
She doesn't say, like Earth. Everybody knows this isn't Earth anymore. Not the way it used to be.
Maybe.
He busies himself for a minute with a chunky film cartridge.
They've got oxygen in their atmospheres, we know that. And they're big enough, but they're most of a light year away. Far closer than the stars, but still too far for telescopes.
Or moon rockets,
she says, slightly wistfully.
Or Sputniks.
If those things worked anymore.
The film is in. He leans over the scope and brings it round to bear on the first of the disks, a couple of degrees off from Satan. The disks are invisible to the naked eye. It takes a telescope to see their reflected light. He glances up at her.
Do you remember the moon?
Maddie shrugs.
I was just a kid when it happened, but I saw the moon some nights, during the day, too.
He nods.
Not like some of the kids these days. Tell them we used to live on a big spinning sphere, and they look at you like you're mad.
What do they think the speed of the disks will tell them?
She asks.
Whether they're all as massive as this one. What they could be made of. What that tells us about who it was that made them.
He shrugs.
Don't ask me. I'm just a bug hunter. This stuff is big. Bigger than bugs.
He chuckles.
It's a new world out here.
She nods very seriously, then actually sees him for the first time.
I guess it is.